Morning Rolling, July 29th, 1994. Tom Minahan and Hobstone, former WSO office manager. Hi, Bob.
Hello.
How are you doing today?
Fine. Beautiful. Beautiful day.
We have also with us Minnie the dog, and they will probably from time to time bark, so don't put those as quotes.
It's occasional boat and motorcycle. And we're at the 15th annual High on Life picnic in beautiful rural Ozarks. That's Missouri.
Must be heaven to steal the phrase from somebody else. What you asked me to do here is to record my response to a series of questions that might be published in a newsletter called New Awakenings.
Yeah.
And I'm reluctant to do that for two reasons, and I'll explain those. One, I'm fairly seriously ill, and I'm not certain I'm going to be around long enough to engage in this kind of discussion in the fellowship, particularly from the standpoint of if things that I might say are used or quoted out of context, I would not have opportunity to correct those kinds of things.
Or redress.
And the other is I'm not particularly interested in furthering conflict or controversy in the fellowship. And from what I've read of the New Awakenings publication, it apparently doesn't feel it has any responsibility for publishing fact as opposed to incorrect information. And I'm not at all satisfied that that's a way that people should behave responsibly in any society, much less in the context of being honest and truthful in Narcotics Anonymous. So I'm reticent to do this, but on the other hand, in fairness to the question of being asked to do this, should I refuse to, I would look suspicious in some way, I have no doubt, or be cast in that thing. And from that standpoint, I'm willing to do this. To the extent that I'm willing to answer the written questions that you've graciously provided that seem to be relevant to things that I have personal knowledge of, things I don't have personal knowledge of, I will pass over, and things that would require me to speculate about things I don't know, I won't respond to.
Okay.
There are a series of questions here that would require speculation, and I will avoid it.
All right.
The first question you have here that I wanted to address is, what would you like to see happen with the information that you have shared with us? Well, I'm hopeful that what you will do is not printed out of context, and that you will take it as being of those things I have personal knowledge of as factual as I can provide it.
Okay. That's supposed to be one of the last questions, you know.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, I wanted to start that off because what I'd like to have you do, just to assure that some objectivity is allowed to maintain in the future, is that you make at least one additional copy of this, aside from your own copy.
Okay.
But a copy for my friend Bob here.
All right.
So that he could keep it in case he's interested in it. The first question that seems to have any relevance is the one that says, Stone first shows up working with addicts, to the best of my knowledge, in 1976. And there's another question that's relative to that. How did you first hear about NA? Those are essentially tied. When I had gone to college in the late 60s, I had become acquainted with another student whose name was David Gildersleeve.
Gildersleeve?
Gildersleeve.
S-L-E-E?
V-E.
V-E.
Yeah. And I, through that, became acquainted with his mother. And some years later, after college and while I was active in community events in my community in Sun Valley, I needed to find out what was going on in the social service activities that I didn't have much knowledge of. Mm-hmm. And as it turned out, Dorothy Gildersleeve was a county social worker at the time, and her task was to identify and use volunteer resources in the community to address problems that the county would otherwise have to spend money on. And she was very happy to plug me in as a volunteer in a number of these nonprofit corporations.
And what year was that?
This started in 1973. Mm-hmm. And during the next 7 years, she got me involved, and one corporation needed help after another.
Mm-hmm.
One of those came in 1976 when she called and asked if I would be interested in helping an organization with the parliamentary procedure matter. They were about to have their first substantial business meeting and needed someone to help. And she thought I was right for the job. I said I would be happy to. And she then had Jimmy Kennan call me. And Jimmy explained they were having what he said was a World Service Conference and asked if I would come and serve as the parliamentarian. I, without hesitation, agreed. He sent me some information. Since we lived in the same town, not more than a mile apart, it's fairly convenient for us to communicate.
Sun Valley.
In Sun Valley.
Yeah.
So that was how I first heard of NA. Of course, I didn't understand it, but I came to the first meeting, and
which was the World Service Conference.
World Service Conference in November of 1976 in Ventura, and I thought I did a very unsatisfactory job, and I was greatly intimidated by these addicts that I met. And when it was over, I was glad I would never see them again.
Who was doing the intimidating?
They were doing the intimidating.
They being
the participants in this meeting. I had never met such gruff people.
Uh-huh.
Who were a mild-mannered conservative politician. It was a real experience. But the next year, they had the World Service Conference in San Francisco, and Jimmy called and told me that and indicated that they wouldn't probably only use my services because I couldn't afford it. Not that I was charging anything, because I didn't ask for anything. He just said they would do without me. The meeting didn't take place in 77, and not enough people showed up. And in the spring of 1978, he called and said, well, we're having another chance at this in a couple of months, and would you be available to do it? And I said, yes. Having forgotten how intimidated I was, and came back in this late spring of 1978 to what was theoretically the third World Service Conference, but in all practical purposes, it was the second.
Ventura again?
No, it was at Valley College in Van Nuys, California, at the border between Van Nuys and California, in the cafeteria of the college. And my only contact that time, of course, was at the meeting. Jimmy would talk to me in advance to schedule it, and other than that, I would have no contact with the fellowship between the service conferences. In 1979, he asked again, and I came. In 1980, he asked, and I came. In 1981, he asked, and I came. 82, he asked, and I came. In 83, he asked, and I came again.
And these are all voluntary?
Yes.
Services?
Yes.
How long was it when I got to 1983 that it built for the week long?
It was about
daily,
a 3-day event.
3 days?
3 or 4 days.
Weekend?
I think in 1983, if I remember correctly, it started on Sunday and ended on Friday.
Yeah, okay.
And I was a self-employed land use planning consultant. People came to me if they wanted zone changes or to use command differently. And I was able to schedule my time in general, to accommodate a lot of my volunteer activities. And NA was just one of many. So that's how I came to get involved with NA. And that also answers the question about I became a parliamentarian. It says here in 1980 or 81, no, as I explained, it came in earlier.
Mm-hmm.
About the next question, had you participated in WSU prior to this? No, and only at the World Service Conference.
So that's kind of like a baptism by fire, is that how they, that what they would call that?
Well, by the third time I had come, I really enjoyed it and began to understand what this was all about. And I'm sure, like Dorothy Gildersleeve before me, who was also a non-addict, had become dedicated to helping as best we could as people on the side.
But she was a social worker for the county. She had a paid employee of the county.
She and Jimmy Kennan had made contact in the 1960s. And when the Board of Trustees were formed, she was one of the three first non-addicts that they added.
Oh.
And she served on the Board of Trustees until about 1973. Okay, the next question here is, there is at least a rumor that you had worked for the government for a time. Could you share about this? Yes, I was an enlistee in the United States Air Force in 1962. I served a little over 4 years. I was a clerk typist and had no significant responsibilities other than typing.
So you didn't start the Vietnam War?
No, I didn't start the Vietnam War. Unfortunately, no one shot at me, and I didn't shoot at anyone. So. But I had my own share of delayed stress syndrome, but that's not relevant to this. These questions aren't in the best orders, but I'm going to try and keep them in some reasonable sequence.
Okay.
In terms of time sequence, the next question that would be relevant is, when did the discussion of removing Jimmy from the office first include me? Well, actually, there had been a running conflict between the World Service Office and a large portion of the fellowship starting sometime probably around 1978. And it was generated over the fact that the office wasn't generally able to respond quickly enough or adequately enough to the needs of a growing fellowship.
And literature sales.
Literature sales and other kinds of assistance.
Yeah.
How do you get meetings started? What do we do in this situation?
Yeah.
At that particular time, the office was entirely voluntary. Jimmy was doing most of it with the assistance of his wife, Betty. Well, I don't think they were married at the time, until 78, I think they got married. And people that Jimmy sponsored helped, and people who knew enough about the office would occasionally go over to his house and help. One of the major participants in getting this office functioning at the time was, of course, Greg Pierce. Most of the people who provided help, however, were his sponsees.
Mm-hmm.
That's a normal relationship in this fellowship.
Was Greg a sponsee?
Yes, Greg was a sponsee. So the discussions about Jimmy didn't involve me at all until it came to meetings of the World Service Conference, and when it came to discussing the removing of Jimmy, I was not involved in that as a discussion until the meeting of 1983, when the conference took some action. The next question here is, what are some of the major concerns? Well, we touched on those. There were, of course, forever in the fellowship, suspicions about other people, especially those in authority and responsibility, people who are not close to what goes on, are susceptible to believing some of the worst things that they might themselves do or might see others do, and kind of suspect that people in the office would do those kinds of things. I don't know what all the concerns were, but being able to respond to the growing fellowship was really, I think, the crux of it.
Of Jimmy's removal?
Well, of the conflict. Of the conflict.
Between the office and the fellowship.
Yeah,
I see.
Next question is, who were the people involved in these early discussions? Now, I think that relates back to the question of discussions about my involvement. I can say that that only occurred at the conference in 1983, and the discussion was primarily with one person, and that person was a guy named Keith S. from Ohio, whose region had pretty much sent him on a mission to either close the office or move the office or remove Jimmy and all the people concerned with the office. And in that conference in 1983, the issue was over the basic text. Nearly all this other stuff that they've been fighting on for years was in the background, but not nearly as important as the conflict over the publishing of the basic text.
Which had yet to be published.
No, they had published it the day the conference began in 1983.
Oh.
They showed up at the conference with a truckload full of books.
Oh.
But the book had been approved the year before, and it had taken 365 days, essentially, to produce it. And even then, as I'm sure you know, there was a conflict over tampering with the language.
In the fourth and ninth.
We'll get to that in a little question. So the only person I was actually involved with was Keith, and in the course of our discussions, probably on the third or fourth day of the conference, the notion came up in the discussion about the possibility of me becoming a manager rather than him proposing the motion that they close the office and kick the board of directors out.
Mm-hmm.
And my response to him in a personal conversation was, if that's what the conference would want to have done, I would certainly be willing to do it within certain reason, certain bounds. He apparently talked about it with other people during that day, and the next morning when we started, he asked the question from the floor after getting recognition from the chairperson, and my response was the same. There followed a motion that was worded in the way to the following language. It said, move that the World Service Conference ask the World Service Office Board of Directors to invite Bob Stone to become the office manager.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, to the best of my recollection, and we want to check the minutes on this, probably unanimously adopted.
That would be during new business of the 83?
I'm not sure in what period of time it was in terms of new business or
okay.
Business, but you'd have to look at the minutes for that. After that motion was adopted, Martin C. from Oregon rose maybe about 10 minutes later and said something to the effect that, you know, I think we've made a mistake here. And the mistake we've made is not in adopting the last motion, but in the fact that we've done so without saying anything about Jimmy. And I think that we need to give our praise and thanks to Jimmy and give him our love and affection. And he had then advanced a motion that a letter be sent to Jimmy post haste by the secretary expressing these kinds of sentiments to Jimmy
mm-hmm.
on behalf of the fellowship.
Mm-hmm.
To the best of my knowledge, the letter was never sent, although the motion was adopted by unanimously. How Jimmy found out about the motion, I do not have precise knowledge. I've been told from several sources that he found out in several different ways, and that's in itself a long story that you will want to spend time on here. The question here that addresses this issue is very long. It says, by 1983, the fellowship had expressed enough concern that a motion was made and passed to ask Jimmy to step down as office director. As I just kind of recited the motion, it wasn't that he asked to be stepped down. It was asked that they asked new directors to invite me.
Right.
So he was never asked by the conference to step down. The original plan was to write a letter to Jimmy from the conference expressing this, and the WCS hoped that this would free Jimmy to do other things. As I explained, that came after the motion was adopted, and it didn't make reference to anything they hoped Jimmy would do or wouldn't do. It was just a thank you letter of intent. Jimmy did not attend that year's conference, and we would expect he received a full report on what happened that year.
Any idea why he wasn't there?
Jimmy made it a practice of not coming to the conference for very long periods of time.
Because of his position at the office?
Well, for several years, there had been a very protracted struggle and emotionally violent struggle amongst the principals involved, and Jimmy was the focus of a lot of these attacks, and they were vindictive and personal attacks. And I believe he just elected not to subject himself to that kind of vilification.
So it wasn't unusual for him not to be there?
That's correct. The first couple of conferences, 76, 78, 79, he did come, but about 1980, he only came for a little while, and then in 83, he only came on the last day in the last hour. The struggles with the WSCLC and Chuck Skinner ended in several resignations at the WSC, including Trustee Bill Beck and Jimmy. This question is disjointed in terms of its facts. There was a struggle between the WLC and others. It didn't involve Chuck Skinner. Chuck Skinner was a proponent of what the literature committee was doing, which was at that time writing the basic text. The resignations that are mentioned here of Bill Beck and Jimmy occurred 2 years earlier, 1981, as a result of a conflict between the board of directors and the board of trustees over an action by the board of directors to have removed two of its existing directors, who also happened to be dead trustees. The two trustees the board of directors removed were Bob Barrett and Greg Pierce, and the issue, as Chuck Skinner, who was then chair of the board of trustees, made very clear, he essentially was saying to Jimmy in private conversations at the time, what you did was probably correct. They weren't participating, and you need people who participated.
Right.
But the way you did it was probably not very good. You didn't notify them in advance they were going to be the subject of a removal motion at the board meeting and give them an opportunity, either in writing or to physically be there, to defend their absence from the board meeting. The result of that was that Jimmy held another board of directors meeting, invited the two people they had removed, voted them back on, this time, however, as ex officio members. In that same period of time, Jimmy, who was then president of the corporation, resigned as president of the board of directors of the World Service Office, as did his wife, who was the secretary at the time, and they elected someone else to fill those positions. I do not believe that Greg or Bob subsequently attended board of directors meetings for a long time, but again, more because they had other things that they were doing.
An ex officio member of that would be just able to participate, and
there is nothing I've been able to find in writing to describe or define what the duties or relationships were.
There's no will. Why would you show up?
Good question. Now, the resignations came at that World Service Conference, which was just a few weeks later. when Jimmy, in showing his disgust at having been beaten up in this way by the Board of Trustees, of course, a change in something they had done, and it was at least in some ways embarrassing to the Board of Directors, he resigned. Bill Beck, who had been on the Board of Directors and the Board of Trustees at that particular time, also resigned. And the resignations were from the Board of Trustees, not from the office. When the Board of Trustees met soon after that conference was over, the trustees voted to accept Bill Beck's resignation, refused to accept Jimmy's resignation, and always considered Jimmy a member of the Board of Trustees even after that.
But did Jimmy?
I have no knowledge. Jimmy and I never talked about that issue. Next question is, had you prior experiences with offices of this sort before becoming a new executive director? Yes, I've been involved with managing a number of nonprofit corporations. At the time that this took place, when I first joined NA in 1976 as a parliamentarian, I was on the directorship of about 12 corporations that had offices. So I was quite familiar with management of offices from the board of director position, and had served prior to that as the chief executive officer of the corporation. The next question says here, Chuck Gates was the board of directors chair at the time, correct? The answer is yes. In 1982, at the World Service Conference, Phil Perez was then chairperson of the Board of Directors. And he remained as chairperson of the Board of Directors until February of 1983, about 10 months later, just before the World Service Conference in 1983. And I believe that he resigned for a number of reasons, and I've not spoken to him to find out his own reasons, but the failure to get the book done in a reasonable time, the change of the language, and that fiery confrontation were probably reasons why he elected not to come before the conference and be vilified for things that took place on his watch. Chuck was then the secretary.
Chuck Gates. Okay.
The vice president of the board at the time was Doug Forsman. And at the meeting where the board accepted Phil's resignation, Chuck immediately assumed, as everyone else did for at least a minute or two, that Doug Forsman would be elected to succeed Phil. But that didn't occur. Someone nominated Chuck, and that's where the votes went, and Doug Forsman apparently then resigned in anger and never came back to the board meeting. Chuck was another one of Jimmy's sponsees, as were Phil Perez and Doug Forsman, as were all but one of the other members of the old board of directors.
Wow.
At the 1982 conference, the World Service Conference had added five directors to that board of directors, none of whom were sponsees of Jimmy. Three of those directors participated in most of this activity, and they constituted a regular minority in the decisions of the board during that period of time, and probably swung the vote in favor of Chuck, because I don't think they like Doug Forsman.
Do you see that as an issue that maybe is pertinent to where we're at in office and conference boards and things with regard to sponsorship relationships on boards like that?
I've never seen any direct evidence of a sponsor-sponsee relationship having an impact on decisions of boards or committees or even the staff of the office. I've always felt uncomfortable about it.
It makes me...
It's difficult for us in a spiritual fellowship to take an individual and say, because you're going to occupy this position, you have to change sponsors.
Right.
I don't know how you can get away with doing that any more than you can say, we can't use you because you're sponsored by this person.
Right.
So it's a riddle that I've never found an answer to. When Chuck wrote his letter about the meeting held in June of 1983 with you and Jimmy, he said that Jimmy still felt that he would be working in the office. Did you sense the same thing? I'm going to presume the letter that is being referred to was part of Chuck's report to the fellowship in the August 1983 fellowship report. In that report, he included an apology, mostly to Jimmy, about how he had been involved in the transition from the conference action to what eventually took place. In that letter, he said that Jimmy was his best friend and his closest friend, and just didn't have either the heart or the will to tell Jimmy that he was being replaced.
Mm-hmm.
And in his concern and love and affection for Jimmy, he just dragged his feet until it was too late. Jimmy and Chuck and I had a meeting following the World Service Conference in which we talked about the management of the World Service Office. Jimmy at that time was aware a change was going to be made and offered a number of suggestions, saying there are some things here that, you know, maybe can get done now that a change is going to take place. However, Jimmy wasn't specifically told he was going to be replaced as office manager, or he didn't get that impression.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that issue, perhaps more than anything else, that Jimmy was hurt most over, I believe.
But he wasn't just told.
He wasn't just told. My business office was about 100 yards from where the World Service office was at the time. Although I had no reason to go over there, and I didn't, it was close. On the Friday in June before the World Service Office Board of Directors meeting, at which the decision was to officially be made, the woman we had working in the office, a woman named Jody, called me up. My name was in Jimmy's Rolodex file. And she said, in her tears, that she was very upset. She didn't like what was going on. She thought it was unfair to Jimmy for all the things he had done for NA, that no one had told him that he was being replaced as office manager, and she thought it sucked.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, that's not what I expected was to take place. I'll come over, we'll talk about it. We hung up. I walked over to the office, and we talked for about a half an hour. And when I got her calmed down enough, I called Jimmy and told him that I was in the office and Jody had called and she was very upset and asked if we could come over. He, of course, said yes, so we drove about a mile to his house. And it fell on my shoulders to explain to him what had been taking place and what was to be expected.
Mm.
And Jimmy, as always, was very kind and very straightforward. He showed and displayed no anger. He was, as much as anything, disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
We sat around for about 2 hours, had some tea, and when we left, it was in, as was customary between Jimmy and I at the time, under good circumstances. The next night, when the board of directors met, we're going to have a short interruption while someone gets out of their car and walks up here, so I'm out.
We're back recording.
we left off with the discussion about Chuck's letter in the World Fellowship Report. He also reported about the discussions that Jimmy and Chuck and I had had during the course of the month between the World Service Conference and the June board meeting. Chuck and I had three other meetings during which we talked about the transition, and it was foremost in our minds that two things occur. One, that Jimmy not be hurt or offended by the transition or how it was done, and that was a precondition of the discussions that he and I had about my willingness mm-hmm. to become temporarily employed with the World Service Office. I suggested to him that I would be willing to do this for a 90-day period, and we brought to the Board of Directors meeting a contract for 90 days. During the period of time that immediately followed this Board of Directors meeting, Jimmy and I had a number of conversations. Unfortunately, there was one period of time that we didn't talk, and it was a critical period of time, and it unfortunately set the tenor for later events, although Jimmy and I always maintained a close personal relationship. At no time did he and I have any conflict or confrontation. At one of my visits to his house in that following month, I implored him that he should do two things to benefit the fellowship. One is that he should write about the history of NA, particularly its beginning, and that he should consent to traveling across the country to speak to the fellowship at meetings. I ventured to suggest to him that I believe the Board of Directors would find money in his budget to finance that when he was going to do that. He said he would give consideration to both ideas. He might be inclined to do them both, but he was just going to relax at that time and wasn't going to do anything. He really wasn't, he said, well enough to travel anyway.
What was the period of time? What was the, you say you the...
Well, that's going to take longer to explain than is really
okay.
Helpful, other than to say that when the board finished its meeting on Saturday, they gave me the keys and left. I came in the next day on Sunday to begin to figure out what it is I've gotten myself into.
Mm-hmm.
And
into the office, you're at the office.
Look around. Uh-huh. And I found piles of orders all over the office. Could have been 20 or 30 piles. And there were money orders, checks, and cash attached to these by paperclip or staple. And my experience of nonprofit organizations and business generally is you just don't do that.
Right.
So I collected all of the papers and put them on one desk and decided Monday morning, the next day, I was going to start working on these things. And I rearranged one of the desks because I decided that's where I was going to work. On Monday morning, I came in and was there for a while, went to the post office, which was a block away. And while I was at the post office, Jimmy came in. I hadn't told Jimmy that I was going to rearrange or do things differently. And he came in and spoke to Jody and said something to the effect, well, I guess the son of a bitches don't want me here anymore because they've already taken over.
Yeah.
And just in that split thing, without me thinking in advance that I should talk to Jimmy in more detail, and with Jimmy getting quickly offended by the fact that this had occurred without him
being a part of,
he concluded, I believe, that we were just giving him
hope. Yeah.
And but like I said, I talked to him several times that week. We were getting mail for him all the time. We were getting phone calls from people.
For Jimmy.
And we always had a good relationship. If we had something to deliver or he had something that I wanted to ask questions about, I'd call him. He was never unwilling to be helpful.
Was Jimmy a big hugger?
I don't know how he was with other people because I didn't see him that often with other people. But hugging was not a custom of the fellowship in the West Coast. That was something that they learned from the folks on the leaves.
Oh, all right. So he was a hand hugger.
Yeah. He did hug some people, I believe, but I don't recall seeing a lot of people from the West Coast hugging.
I don't think they do yet, still today.
They're learning. The next question is here, was there no way to include him in this transitional process? I think there could have been a better transition if Chuck and I had met with Jimmy and explained things differently than occurred during the meeting with him. Unfortunately, at that time, there was still the uncertainty of the board of directors hadn't met yet and made a decision. Because the conference had asked that this be done, it wasn't a requirement on the board of directors. And when the motion was worded, I was helpful in putting together those words because there was clearly the responsibility residing in the board of directors, not the conference. The conference could wish all at once. Board of Directors had responsibility, and Chuck was leery of, although I felt he was certain the board was going to adopt it, he didn't want to make a decision to say, Jimmy, this is what the board has decided, because the board hadn't decided.
Right. Well, that's basically all the conference can do of the offices, request, ask that they do something.
It's still not mandatory that they fulfill. I wouldn't say that that's the case.
Oh, it is?
At that particular time, there was no provision in the office bylaws that required adherence to decisions by the Rural Service Company. And we'd have to check with the WSO bylaws, but I believe that, at least on two occasions I know we attempted to put that language in the bylaws of the Rural Service Office to require that for instructions from the Rural Service Conference, the board is mandated to do about it. Could be, that I'm mistaken on that, but I don't think so.
We're nearing the end of this tape. I'm just going to go ahead and turn it over to you.